Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
Welcome to a slightly different PR Moment podcast. This week we're going to be doing a year in review for 2018. The show will be divided up into three parts. First up, we've got Alice Wakeman from Hanson Search, who's going to be talking to us about the PR talent market in 2018. Then we've got the PRCA's Francis Ingham, who will be giving us a wider perspective about the health of the sector over the past 12 months. And finally, we've got Taylor Herring's James Herring to give us his perspective on the most interesting pieces of work over the last year. Don't forget, it's the PR Moment Awards entry deadline coming up soon. Slightly depending on when you're listening to this podcast, the deadline is, or was, the 14th of December. And the late deadline is the 11th of January. Alice, welcome to the PR Moment podcast.
Thank you.
It's good to have you back. I think, if my memory serves me correctly, you were on the second ever PR Moment podcast. And things have moved on a bit since then. I used to, for those who haven't listened to the early versions, I used to record them at home and edit them myself. And hence the bird song in the background on those early ones. But thankfully, marketeers took pity on me and here we are.
Yes, definitely more sophisticated.
Thank you. Alice, recruitment is renowned as a good barometer for the health of a sector. So what have been the sort of the busyness barometer, if that is a phrase, of the recruitment sector over the past 12 months or so?
Yeah, I mean, Ben, it's been an interesting year. I think there's been lots of sort of different factors that have come into play that have affected the impact. Overall, it's been a good year, but it's definitely had challenges throughout. And I think there's some factors that are going across the industry. I mean, each industry sector, whether that's corporate, consumer, healthcare, technology, have had different impacts. But overall, I think the sort of looming Brexit situation and also the industry is in this sort of dichotomy. Is it PR? Is it integrated communications? And also the impact of client work shifting from retainers to more project-based work. Have all seen their impact in terms of talent and whether businesses have the appetite to invest in senior and mid-level. At the beginning of the year, it entered really strong and there was a lot of appetite. It became quieter over the summer. I personally think that was down to the weather and everyone was drinking rosé in the back garden every weekend and not writing their CVs. Yeah. But and now we're busy again. I mean, it's notoriously busy at this time of year, but speaking to clients, you know, I think we've reflected also how they felt and the pattern of flow. But there's been sort of different challenges in terms of new skills and new hires coming in, which has resulted in people wanting to hire. But at the moment, I think it's a very buoyant, positive market, and people are making the investment hires across the industry sectors and also looking at new skills coming into the industry.
Right. But and that, when you say clients, do you mean agencies and in-house, both?
Yeah. Right? So we do a lot of agency work. We're probably about 65% agency, and the rest in-house. And that fluctuates. Agencies historically will hire good people, thinking that they can help grow revenue. In-house is a different market. Is that there's either a job or there isn't.
Right.
And there's definitely a shift in terms of in-house teams looking to grow and expand and move talent in-house. Talent's always wanted to go in-house from an agency side. We haven't seen any shifts in that. But in-house teams are starting to look to grow and build. And so there's definitely a market there.
So in-house teams are getting bigger. Mm. Now, I just wanted to drill a bit further into the detail of what you said a minute ago about the reasons for the trends you said about it being at times a challenging year. Because I get Brexit, there's uncertainty around that. That's clear. But the other elements around, is it PR? You know, public is PR, consumer PR? Is it a deeper corporate reputation game? And that integration element that they've been around for a while, haven't they? So that has that come more to the fore this year, or is that just something that's always been in the background for the last 3-4 years?
Yeah, I mean, the debate's definitely livened up this year, and I think that's probably because of the impact of a lot of the larger holding groups, and they're really questioning you know, how they're structured and, you know, is it a talent-first model? Is it an integrated model? Is it a model that it has its own specialisms? And increasingly, we've got the management consultancies buying in great talent, and there's a sort of competition and war on talent between the agencies and the management consultancies. So which
management? Because there's been a few purchases by management consultancies of PR firms, but you're saying that they're recruiting, that it's not just by acquisition, they're also hiring significant amounts of PR talent as well.
I think it's becoming both ways. So okay. the management consultancies definitely went out to market and hiring in great PR individuals, creatives, integrated marketeers. But now actually the reverse is happening, where the PR agencies are saying, well, we need to offer the strategy as well. So there's that breadth of skill set that's coming into the agency world that we never saw before.
Okay. So when you say strategy, do you mean commerce strategy or do you mean deeper business strategy?
Deeper business strategy. Okay. So offering a more end-to-end solution than a management consultancy could offer. So it's all underpinned on the marketing commerce perspective, but there's definitely companies that are coming through and positioning themselves as more business consultants with the comms integrated marketing at the forefront of that.
Okay. So just coming back out again from a perspective of what type of positions, what sort of positions are in demand, I guess both from a skill side of things and a seniority, what's hot?
Yeah, so it was interesting. I hosted a panel just a couple of weeks ago on this, and it was unanimous that data and analytics... Right. Across all four agencies, that was their sort of most in-demand skill set of 2018. But also looking at the softer skills as well, like people are looking for good managers. So, one agency in particular is saying, well, actually, you can't underestimate the need for actually great leaders within the industry. And that was really important. So it's the skills of the job alongside the skills of actually being a great leader to help build and manage those teams.
And where are we getting those analytics people from? Clearly there's analytics people who work in PR, but presumably there's not enough of them.
Yeah.
So we have to find them from elsewhere, do we?
Absolutely. So increasingly we are seeing new roles entering into the PR and comm space, which come from more of a traditional advertising digital marketing landscape. Okay. So you have to turn to the media agencies and the, media buying agencies, the digital agencies, to look for those analytical skills, as well as the planner skills, the creative skills, and individuals who businesses who only want people with those skills from a PR background, the supply is so small, it makes it so hard.
Yeah.
So businesses have to be broader in terms of the background that these skills are coming from.
Right. And what are the earliest things? I mean, you mentioned corporates. Corporate's heart, digital, healthcare. Healthcare's historically been so competitive.
Yeah, but. I mean, healthcare, there is a real lack of talent. There always has been. I've been recruiting that market for over 18 years. But they're coming to almost a crisis point where that mid-level is just impossible to find. And right. So having to think more creatively, and we're coming up with ideas in which we can take individuals out of other industry sectors and move them into healthcare. Corporate's very strong at the moment. You mentioned digital. Well, that's now more across every single industry. So yeah. Less about building digital practices, having more of a digital lead within an agency or a team, and everyone skilled up in digital and social. So there's definitely a shift on that. But consumers buoyant.
Anything not buoyant, I suppose?
It's interesting because I think at that mid-level, there is a lack of talent, and
so at the mid level, it's clearly really tough to recruit.
Yeah,
the senior side of things is that you've got a bit more choice around.
Yeah, there's definitely more roles coming into the market at the moment on the senior side, but that's naturally sort of end of year. People are sort of thinking about 2019. How can they find really good leaders within the business? But that comes with people who can drive revenue, who can manage and lead individuals, and also have a sort of a broader skill set. So they understand the PR industry, but understand where that fits in with the wider marketing mix.
Sure. I've always thought it's tough ask, is it, to join an agency at a senior position? What sort of percentage of those sort of work out, do you think? Is it not Hanson here, but just industry-wide? It's quite a risk, isn't it?
There is a risk. It's a major investment.
Yeah.
And it's not just the recruitment fee or the time that you're spending. It's actually the impact of a bad hire and the ripple effect that that can cause and the loss of opportunity in terms of not being able to progress your business further because you have the wrong leader in place and then getting them out the business. So it's fundamental that you get number one, the hiring right. But before you do that, it's understanding what's the business objective, finding the right hire, and then the onboarding is absolutely key. And it's not just about onboarding, it's about integration into that business. We actually work with clients, have set up a module in terms of helping clients onboard and integrate senior level talent into the industry because it is such a challenge for so many businesses. There's a real feeling of you find the right person, you dump them on the desk and say, off you go. However, the impact of that can be catastrophic. So getting it right is key. But there's some great individuals out there.
Right.
The fundamental of what you've got to get down to is the culture of that business and hiring senior level individuals where culture and values actually marry each other.
Sure. Now, you mentioned it a bit earlier, but is the way that agencies are restructuring impacting the type of people they want?
Yeah, I mean, we're in this sort of interesting phase at the moment with agencies of thinking about who are they, what are they, and who should they hire. And there's definitely a feeling that they're looking for people with greater flexibility of attitude and individuals who understand the discipline that they're coming from but have the capability of seeing where their PR skill sets fit within the broader marketing mix. So they are looking for and structuring a bit more around their clients and then looking to see how they can service those clients to offer them a more of a broader campaigns-led work. So it all depends whether we're talking about the bigger holding groups or the individual smaller businesses. The smaller ones tend to be a little bit more agile. They're putting sort of client first and building teams around them. Other businesses are looking at industry sectors. So they might have energy specialists, healthcare specialists, FMCG specialists, fashion specialists, and building teams around those areas. So there isn't a model that is coming through that I can definitively say that's what everyone's going for. I think we're in a period of testing and change and evolution.
Right. Because what you're suggesting now, I guess, is that as the breadth of work that PR agencies are doing increases, they will need a different skill set of people. But no one's quite come up with a magic formula that means that they can structure their business in a way, at least on scale anyway. I think the independents can do it because they've got a particular niche that they can then and populate a skill set around that niche. But if you're a wider business, it's more difficult to do just because if you're not careful, you'll run out of money because you'll hire so many different people.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, and they are looking at those structures, and some agencies are putting up voluntary redundancies so that they can then restructure how their businesses are shaped for the future. And
interesting to see how that Ogilvy. Obviously, they've gone for voluntary redundancy, but we haven't heard the numbers yet, have we?
No. And there's reasons behind that. You know, they're sort of saying we want to change our model, so we want to offer our clients a different solution. And if you sort of
look great externally, but I can understand the logic behind it.
And just looking at the holding groups, you know, they're amalgamating all of their offices and bringing everyone together, and there is clearly a drive to save on costs. And also to offer that integrated solution. So things have to change. I mean, if we just look at what Martin Sorrell is now saying in the industry about, you know, a unified offering and looking at agencies offering that unified approach in terms of marketing solutions.
Yeah, okay. So with, I suppose, all that in mind, what do employers want? Do they want generalists or specialists at the moment? Because you get different themes from different agencies.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting one. You hear a lot about this sort of hiring in an expert versus hiring this generalist with almost of a T-shaped skill set. So they've come up from a specific industry background and now they understand this is the broader mix across the cross of digital, SEO, influencer marketing. And I mean, it really does depend on the business. I mean, I personally, what we're seeing is a lot of generalists being hired, right, but then pulling in perhaps freelancers who've got their expertise. There's definitely a continuation in this year of people who really understand an industry sector. So that's almost more important, is to understand the industry sector.
I.e. the vertical, so healthcare or technology or...
Or and sometimes they can be even more granular than that.
Right, so fintech,
Absolutely, Energy, food and drink. You know,
but hasn't that always been the case? Has that changed this year or has that just always been...
Exactly. I think that's a continuation train. Okay. But I think increasingly because there's so many different types of ways in which we are marketing and PR is evolving. So you need to constantly evolve your skill set.
Yeah.
However, if you understand the industry, you can evolve your skill set. And that's often not rocket science. And they might be able to pull in an expert to teach them how to do that. But really understanding that industry knowledge and building up those contacts and be able to generate revenue and win new business, that's really hard.
Yeah.
That would be my advice, is really know your industry sector and really drill down on that and build your contacts and be known in that market. Because actually, the rest probably can be taught by people around you.
Okay. And the final one, are we still witnessing a sort of rise of the freelancer in public relations?
I mean, absolutely. And not just in PR, it's happening across all industry sectors, and freelancers are rising 3 times faster than permanent employment.
And is that PR or
broadly?
But it's a trend
that's happening, and it's disrupting a lot of industries. Healthcare's absolutely seeing that. Consumer, they're seeing that.
When you say healthcare and consumer, you mean healthcare PR and consumer?
Absolutely,
PR, right.
Yeah. We're really seeing massive trends in those markets.
But is that on the sorts of positions you mentioned a minute ago, where it's very specialist, or is it from a wider generalist perspective, or both?
So it's both. It's of two impacts, where individuals are thinking about the way in which they're working and they want to work in a different way. And when the market is quite buoyant and there's a shortage of that particular skill set, then actually they have the capability of doing that.
Okay.
And
so actually it comes down to supply and demand a little bit?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're confident about the market, they're confident about being able to get a job.
Yeah.
So and also there is this trend of thinking about a better work-life balance and greater flexibility.
Right.
And if a business can't provide that, then it drives people into that freelance market. Likewise, there's so many skill sets that are required under one roof, it's impossible to house all those skill sets with permanent staff.
Yeah.
And there's also a shift from retained work to project-based work. So all these different factors are coming into play. So the sort of savvy businesses are thinking about their core team that really are leading client relationships and driving the revenue side, and then staffing it around the edges and periphery with experts who they can pull in, and they're building teams of experts to do that. So we've actually launched a technology which enables businesses to build teams of freelancers and manage those freelance relationships, because increasingly people have to think about who are my permanent staff but also who are my freelance staff. Fine. And they're really valuable to the business, and how are you going to engage in them, how are you going to find them and keep them for specialist projects.
I mean, that sounds a pretty sensible business model, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't sound like we need to, oh, no, that's an awful thing. That sounds like a perfectly reasonable way of going about it. The only concern would be that if I'm a PR firm and I have a type of work within a specialism, do I water down the differentiation of my business compared to my competitors if, in essence, we're all kind of using the same freelancers?
Well, that's where I think it's important to start building your black book of freelancers,
right,
freelancers that are known to your business, that you actually might use on a regular basis. So these freelancers, if they're getting regular work coming from you, they might have a handful of clients that they like to work with. And also, sometimes they work in a different way. They might be working part-time, so they might be quite comfortable with the amount of work that you're supplying to them.
Okay.
But that's why it's really important to start building up a a pipeline, but also a way in which you're engaging and keeping your freelancers.
So you can tell them what's coming down the road.
Absolutely. Right. And be known as a great place for freelancers to go and work. Right. Because increasingly they have the choice as well.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's a skill set in itself, isn't it? How to bring a freelancer quickly into a project.
Absolutely.
So that they can start adding value straight away, I guess.
And if the more they get to know your business, the quicker they can be engaged. And if you have the tools in which you're onboarding them very quickly, you engage with them fast, you know how to communicate with them, they understand the direction in which your business is going, you'll get them up to speed quickly and you can tap into them as and when you need to. So, you know, there are definitely different business models that are coming out of that and allows people to be more efficient. And also, you're not then stretching your core team, which often can be a reason why people look to move.
OK. Alice Whitman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Frances, coming to you now as the next part of our PR year in review. You launched the Eco World Report a couple of days back, and with emphasis on the UK numbers, I suppose. Has it been a good year for PR?
Yeah, it has been a good year for PR. I've been Director General of the PRSA for 11 years, and I've been Chief Executive of Eco for 6.
And time flies, eh?
It does indeed, when you're doing lots of interviews and award ceremonies and conferences, yeah. And I would say that I haven't seen the industry in better shape than I see it today. It's a bit nervous in the UK about Brexit, and it's a bit nervous around the world about just the general economic conditions and uncertainty, but the market I see is powering ahead, really. And the numbers we released in Singapore earlier on this week said that in every one of the regions of the world, as we break the world down, optimism is higher than it was last year, and expectations of profitability are higher than they were last year. And that's certainly the case for the UK, as well as everywhere else around the world. So I look to 2019 with just expecting good things, really.
Okay. For just looking back at the year past, what have been the biggest challenges that you've seen?
We have the common challenges that have been there for years about the blending of disciplines. Around the need to prove the value that we add and about the continuing challenge of attracting and then retaining the very, very best people for our industry. And obviously you've got the localised challenges, if you like, around making a success of digital, and I think that's happening, and about the agencies at the very top of the market being expected by their networks to deliver both increased turnover and increased margin, and the challenge of that. The people in the middle of the market often fighting not to be commoditized, and the niche agencies having the fluctuating market that they face, which is a normal thing. But the market I see is in a very good place. Now, I mean,
I'd agree with that, but who's the... Yeah. I mean, The most of the commentary currently is that the big holding group PR firms are struggling to grow in anything other than low single digit growth, albeit with the caveat that it's much harder to grow if your revenue is much larger. The mid-sized firms having quite a good time would seem to me to be the case, that they're growing at a pace.
I think the mid-sized firms with a market offering are doing really well. I think
you mean a specialism?
Yeah, yeah. I think the mid-sized firms who compete on price, who are generalist, are having a difficult time.
Right.
But if I look back over the 11 years I've been the PRCA, none of that is new, really.
Yeah.
It's always been the case. The niche guys have a particular appeal, and the really international guys always have an international pipeline. I think the difference is, over the last few years, the expectation from holding companies of both that increase in turnover and that increase in profitability. And the people I speak with say that's a real challenge. Now, the thing that has definitely ratcheted up over the last 12 months has been the fear of Brexit. That's undeniably the case.
What does that manifest itself as?
Well, the conversation I have with, I think, basically everybody who cites it as a problem, and let's be fair and state the caveat that lots of PR agencies do not operate internationally, and lots of them are not particularly worried about Brexit. But the conversation I have with those who are tends to go along the lines of, it hasn't impacted us. And they often say, actually, it's been quite good for us, particularly if we're public affairs agencies. But there's just a general lack of certainty.
Yeah.
And as we get closer to that cliff edge, as some people would describe it, that uncertainty obviously grows. And people are just concerned that clients will turn off the spending taps in the way that happened 10 years ago, not because anything bad is happening to them, just as a small c conservative measure to make sure that they're not being made vulnerable to what happens at the end of March.
Sure. Okay. And the bit that I... And certainly there's a... In terms of profile, there is definitely momentum for the independent shops. I agree with you on within a specialism. We see that within consumer, within tech, within corporate, within public affairs. Those guys seem to be have a lot of momentum in the market, basically around the quality of their work. You get to see a bit more that the numbers of those sorts of firms than most. Is that that positive momentum mirrored in their numbers as a trend?
From the numbers that we see... yes, but let me give just a flip side to that. I think the power of independent, reasonably large agencies is that they can take a longer term view.
Right.
And without naming them, we could all think of a few who've been able to do that. One, for example, around the corner from where we are in Clerkenwell at the moment. So they don't have to look at the delivering the margin numbers every single year that they have done in previous years. They can say, we're going to take a bit of a hit this year and invest in our teams and invest in our capabilities and not worry about it too much. But that's just the nature of business, really, isn't it? That if you own it, you can take a longer-term view so long as you don't have to get out right now.
Yep. Okay. Just thinking about the sort of... the blending of sectors, of disciplines, and specifically for now anyway, just on that that blending of earned media versus paid media and PR versus advertising or and advertising, depending on how you want to look at it. Is PR winning? I always think we're in danger of looking a bit naive there, because the numbers of PR compared to advertising it's such a smaller market. But you think we are winning?
It's a smaller market because you're paying a lot in advertising to buy the advertising space. So it's not real money; it's just passing hands.
Right.
I've heard this a lot over the years that our agency leaders are, industry leaders rather, are worried that other disciplines are eating their lunch. I really don't think they are. So we released the Eco World Report, as you said, in Singapore a few days ago. And that profitability expectation and that optimism is driven by a few things. One of them is we're really good at digital and we've mastered that in a way that other marketing disciplines haven't. There's also the fact that CEOs continue to invest in corporate reputation to see the impact of that both on their own careers and on the fortunes of their company. There's the fact that our members are providing services they didn't used to do. And there's the fact that has been in every one of the last World Reports for the last 6 years that spend is moving from advertising towards PR. And even if it's only quite a small percentage of advertising PR moving to our industry, it makes a lot in terms of growth for PR and also in terms of profitability for PR. And we really don't see any of that ending. And the people I speak with who represent other bits of the marketing mix in the world are pretty envious of PR.
Mm.
And the people I speak with, again, while they have their concerns correctly and they are cautious correctly, the people in our industry are very confident about the future.
Sure. I mean, I think that's you've got a point there. I mean, it's not a perfect market, is it? It's a competitive market. There's challenges, of course. But you've been at PRC, how long did you say?
11 years.
And your research anyway says that the sector's grown in
well
numbers every year, right?
In terms of PR people, it's at least double what it was.
Right.
And in terms of values, we did the PR census in the UK alongside the Eco World report. Now, look, the 80, I think it's 84,000 people who work in PR today in the UK, they're not doing just PR all day, because their work is blended as well.
Mm.
But the numbers in PR are definitely going up, and the numbers in advertising are definitely going down.
Right.
And that's true both in terms of people and in terms of money, and I think probably profitability as well. And I noticed the comments over the last few years of Martin Sorrell. They have changed in tone about the relative emphasis he puts on advertising compared to PR, and they've changed in favour of our industry. And I think that's because the tide is in our favour.
Sure. I mean, just final question for me then. As PR is increasing its breadth of work, is it being paid for it?
Yeah. I mean, there's still the issue that we over-service. And Richard Houghton, former chairman of the PRCA, president of Eco, has this phrase that Fridays are free. And he's correct in many ways, made irrelevant by the fact he doesn't work Fridays because he goes sailing, often with you, I believe. But, yeah, we over-service. I do wonder, and it's a challenge, I do wonder sometimes...
But that's no worse than it was, right?
No, yeah. It's no worse than it was, but I do wonder sometimes if we make too much of this. Because I reckon if you went to virtually every profession, they would say that they overservice their clients. Even lawyers. I know that lawyers drag it out when you're on the phone with them, but they probably say they give you time for free that isn't warranted as well. The bigger challenge is this. For year after year, our industry has said that its number one issue is attracting and retaining the very best people. And it has an issue with that because it doesn't pay them well enough. And it doesn't pay them well enough because it doesn't charge clients enough for the service it provides. And it doesn't charge clients enough because it doesn't prove the value it adds.
Mm.
And so our simple line with this, we said it year after year, is we need to embrace evaluation, make a big thing of it, prove the value that we add, then we can charge people more, pay people more, and we can turn this vicious cycle into a virtuous one.
That would be lovely, but that's a hard thing to do, right?
Because
let's be clear that, well, all the evidence suggests that there is no one magic silver bullet of PR measurement.
No,
so you
and
end up with a suite of KPIs, which isn't therefore makes it a more simple problem than. And I agree with your point, but it's not a one sentence answer, is it, to that problem?
No, it's not. And at virtually the same time, I became Director General of the PRCA here. Barry Lagater became chief executive of AMEC. That's 11 years. And I think the world has, our industry world has moved on enormously over those 11 years. Evaluation is far more sophisticated than it was.
Mm.
There's a hell of a lot more to be done. But every year in the World Report, we ask how many people, region by region, never use AVEs, as in never. This year,
I can't believe you brought AVEs into my podcast.
I have brought AVEs into it. this year is 48%, never used them. Last year was 44%.
That's World Report, did you say?
World Report.
Okay.
Every year that number has gone up. So the numbers are all going in the right direction.
I mean,
there's
presumably,
more to be done.
Maybe I'm presuming if you ask the same question in the UK, it would be a lot less than 40.
Yes, it is.
40,
you know, it's the UK and North America that lead the way in never using them.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you rolled back 10 years, there would have been a minority of the industry in the UK and North America that never used AVEs. And when you ask them why you do still use them, they say the clients want them.
Yep.
And that's the challenge for the industry.
Or to be fair, the measurement company gives them to them for free. So
that's true. Yeah. But I always look on the positive on this. Every year, the situation in terms of evaluation gets better. And that is integral to the future of our industry
that
in the UK.
That means client fees will go up and be able to pay people more.
That's the one.
And it's all going to have a happy ending.
I think it will have a happy ending, yes.
Francis, thank you very much.
Ben, thank you.
James, just coming to you, just talk a bit about the highlights you've seen in terms of the work for 2018.
It's been a great year for work, I think. Some of my favourites. Well,
non-Taylor Herring ones.
Fine. I'm not allowed to put my own in.
I banned you from putting your own work in.
Well, can you just give me that pen? I'll just cross this one out and that one.
James, give us your one campaign.
All right.
Joking.
All right, how many? Colin Kaepernick, the face of Nike's new Just Do It campaign. This was incredibly bold. So for anyone that was asleep under a rock, the brand made the NFL athlete Colin Kaepernick the face of their 30th anniversary Just Do It campaign. So he was the player who famously kneeled during the national anthem as a protest against racism and police brutality in America. And he posted a black and white close-up of himself on Instagram featuring the Nike logo and the Just Do It slogan. And I think the quote was, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything." And actually, in corporate America, for a brand as big as Nike to have done something as ballsy as that is amazing. I mean,
especially
most,
in the current climate.
In the current climate, in the hugely divided world that we live in, to come down on one side of a very polarising kind of topic is incredibly brave and bold, and that's amazing. And if Nike can do it, frankly, any other brands should be able to stand for something. And I thought that was incredibly brave of them.
And from his perspective as well, I mean, he's potentially finished his career, isn't it? I still don't think he's got a contract. So I know that's quite the angle of what you were coming from this. But I mean, I'm sure I don't worry about his bank account. I imagine Nike have sorted him out. But, you know, it's an interesting angle on that.
Well, I think he was signed to Nike as a Nike athlete and basically had been sort of sleeping and Nike were kind of waiting for something to happen. Right. And he was kind of on their books and on their roster, I think, and I might have got this wrong, so don't shoot me. But they waited their time for the right moment and they played a blinder. So I thought that was amazing.
And your second favourite piece of work this year?
So this was from Calm, the suicide prevention charity. They sparked huge discussion by putting sculptures of 84 men on the top of the ITV South Bank building.
It was a haunting image, wasn't it, that one?
It really was. And it was Project 84 represented the 84 men who take their own lives in the UK every week. It created huge conversation. It was, I think they had a media partnership with This Morning, which was why it ended up on the roof of ITV, and they managed to properly get into a big on-air discussion about it. But the image and the Twitter and everything else, I thought really, really brave, and I thought that was fantastic.
And I think that's had good, in terms of the impact of that campaign, it seemed to have resonated with the target audience.
100%. Diesel. Diesel have done some great work this year. The campaign that caught my eye in particular was one that they ran ahead of the New York Fashion Week. So they, as many other fashion brands, have a problem with counterfeit products.
Yeah.
So they decided to have some fun with this. And what they did is they created a fake fashion brand pop-up called Diesel. And this was a fake goods store where you could get limited edition hoodies and jeans marked Diesel rather than Diesel. And this was, it was just a really clever piece of work because, you know, not only were these customers buying fakes, but they were actually buying limited edition Diesel pieces. So if you're a Diesel fanboy or a fangirl, you're going to be, you know, pretty envious of people who've got their hands on one of these.
This is one of those campaigns that without video, it wouldn't have worked, would it? But the video just brought the whole thing to life.
It did.
Was superb.
Yeah, it really, really did. And, you know, they worked out a way to sort of maximise the fame around this so you could buy Diesel pieces through the official website. And I think the thing that really caught my attention on this was that it is rare to find a fashion brand that doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah.
Of all of the different bits of the industry, you know, the Zoolander, you know, stereotype of lack of self-awareness, I think, haunts that industry.
yeah, and it, but I I remember thinking when I watched that video, I've only been walking on the street at that particular time. I don't know, was there a London activation? I don't think there was. Was that, I think it was in New York?
I don't think there was, but I mean, they've done some other really brilliant things as well, actually. I mean, their latest influencer campaign was to align with Berlin's best kebab shop, and they dressed the kebab shop staff in their latest range. And I just think, you know, they know how to take not life too seriously, and they're doing it really, really well.
Brilliant. And which other campaign caught your eye this year?
So I want to give a shout out to KFC because they put their worst week behind them with a full page print apology advert, which I think appeared in Sun and Metro and possibly some other places. This featured their jumbled logo, FCK. And it just won loads of praise for striking the right tone in communication.
Do you think it won loads of praise within our little PR, creative, advertising bubble? Do you think why the wider public got it or cared?
I remember it going nuts on Twitter. And I remember, I mean, this was a sort of a PR idea delivered by an ad agency. I mean, and taking full-page apology adverts is a really interesting way of approaching it. I think what was really great about this is that normally what happens is during crisis comms, everybody puts their head down. They're in fear. And, you know,
call the suits.
Yeah, exactly. And it just goes to show that it's possible to have fun with crisis comms as long as nobody died.
Yeah. I mean, that's the key, isn't it, on this one? It was a, guess what, chicken can get to a restaurant. So it was a big financial hit for KFC, but it wasn't a deeper problem that may have been they could push the boundaries, or they had a greater license, I suppose, to do some more interesting stuff around it.
It was, and I think at no stage were KFC probably dealing with utter outrage from customers. I think, Twitter was having a field day with the hilarity of people being angry about the lack of fried chicken. Now, I'm sure there were some people that were probably genuinely cross about it, but it was all about the tone.
It's a good understanding of tone of voice, actually, isn't it? Because just thinking about O2 at the back end of last year when they had their outage, if they'd have tried a similar approach, it just would never have worked. So it's got to be, these responses have got to be specific to the business you're in. I forget where we are. Is this the last one?
Do you want one more?
One more? Your final?
Okay, one more. The Trump baby.
The Trump baby. Now, I wanted the Trump baby to be a bit bigger. I love the idea, but it wasn't that big, was it? But
well, I think, in fairness, you know, the activation was a bit disappointing. But what made it amazing was the whole pre-campaign.
Yes.
It was the fact that protesters had to go through this whole approval process with Sadiq Khan's office for getting permission for a giant inflatable Trump baby to fly over London during the president's visit. And the fact that they'd crowdsourced £18,000 to get a helium-filled 20-foot Trump baby, which I think they described as an angry baby with a fragile ego and tiny hands. And I think lots of people commented on the fact that it probably wasn't as good as the photoshopped imagery that they'd put in for their planning consent, but who cares?
It didn't matter by then.
I just love the Trump baby. They should, that would be in my there should be a permanent exhibit of that somewhere for people to go and see.
That's
and
very true.
Take a
in
selfie
the PR
with.
Museum, wherever that might be.
Maybe there's an whole idea for another business plan there, a PR museum of stunt props.
Taylor Herring can sponsor it.
Yeah, okay.
James, thank you so much for the review of 2018.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.